With the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday night roundup, and we're coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C., and we have an awful lot to talk about for this evening's program. First of all, the toll-free number, if you'd like to call into the show, is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. That is toll free. So what has been happening here, here in Washington, and around the world? Well, we'll get to a couple of, news items, but let's, first, discuss, what's happened in India. If you are watching the corporate media, you are getting it wrong. They are talking about things that are not the case. Anytime you hear Al-Qaeda, with reference to the attacks in Mumbai, which is actually Bombay. I understand, you know, a lot of people in India even still call it Bombay. A lot of countries have changed names of cities. You know, it's not the Ivory Coast. It's Cote d'Ivoire. I don't speak French. I speak English. I know French, but I refer to it as the Ivory Coast. It's Burma. It's not Myanmar. And as far as Mumbai, it's still Bombay. It's still Madras, not Chennai. It's Calcutta, not Kolkata. So I'll probably just call it Bombay. Well, the attacks in Bombay, we're told the group responsible, nobody's ever heard of, the Deccan Mujahideen. Deccan is a plain. It's the flatlands of India. It would be like having a some terrorist group here calling themselves the Rocky Mountain Liberation Front or some other such nonsense. Be very careful what Wolf Blitzer tells you, because, of course, Wolf Blitzer is nothing more than a cipher for his friends over at the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. He wouldn't know the truth or the news if it bit him on the rear end. And that goes for the rest of them, Fox News and MSNBC. We'll talk about who's responsible for this. It's some terrorism involved, but it's basically, we're talking about a gangland war between a Muslim who used to live in Bombay and is now in exile in Pakistan, other organized crime groups who are Hindu. They're fighting over turf. Now, the fact is they employ terrorists. They employ people who have AK-47s and hand grenades and other things, and obviously had inflatable rafts that this group used to sail into Bombay Harbor from a mothership, which apparently came from Pakistan. But what we're seeing is some score settling between rival criminal syndicates. Some of these are tied to intelligence operations. Others, you know, some of them are tied also to terrorist groups. But when you get to this part of the world, the Indian subcontinent, it's all one nice big happy family. The criminal syndicates, the intelligence agencies like the Pakistani ISI, the Indian RAW, they all use criminal syndicates and they use terror groups. And what we saw play out was in Bombay was some scores settling. So we'll talk about that in greater detail right after we come back from this short break. This is Wayne Mattson from Washington, D.C. Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday night roundup of this past week's events, coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C., here in the nation's capital. I want to play first this clip. Now, this is from Al Jazeera, and Al Jazeera usually gets stories about the Middle East fairly correctly, except you'll even hear some of this corporate propaganda creep in on this Al Jazeera report. So let's listen to how Al Jazeera reported this these attacks in Bombay, if we can play this clip.
The attacks in Mumbai already have people wondering if there is a connection to something far beyond local problems.
What happened there is our 9/11. So they planned the same way. These must be connected with Taliban, Al-Qaeda.
In spite of these sentiments, there's been zero proof that bin Laden or his Al-Qaeda organization were in any way involved. What we do know so far is that over 100 have been killed by a group calling itself the Deccan Mujahideen. There are a few details about the organization, but their attacks may reveal what they stand for. Armed with grenades and Kalashnikovs, they were highly organized. Some came ashore by boat in the evening hours on Wednesday. Their exits sealed, and as fire raged around some, it appeared they were not at all concerned with returning. Early on, analysts suggested that the killings might have been motivated by what could be called fighting the near jihad. That is, seeking retribution over internal Indian issues, like Hindu oppression of Muslims in Kashmir, which deeply divides the country.
With these guys, it's almost a fidayeen operation of the sorts we've seen in places like Jammu and Kashmir and other places.
This year alone, Kashmir has already motivated scores of bombings inside India.
It might have been a local-oriented event, but then the targets don't quite match that.
The attackers made obvious efforts to seek out Westerners, looking in particular for British and American citizens. And that suggests that the Deccan Mujahideen were also interested in fighting the Far Jihad, a trademark of bin Laden's organization. They hit the local tourist trap known as the Leopold Cafe and struck at hotels that most Indians could not afford. They also seized the offices of an ultra-Orthodox Jewish outreach group known as Chabad, suggesting an attempt was made to strike at Israelis. Al-Qaeda has not claimed any involvement in the Mumbai attacks, but it does seem that like-minded groups continue to emerge, and that's in spite of all the efforts by the U.S. and its allies in its so-called global war on terror. Clayton Swisher, Al Jazeera.
Okay, well, you heard only part of the truth there. It is local. Forget Al-Qaeda. You know, you heard the Indian guy. Of course, they're going to push, this is our 9/11. They have many, many 9/11s in India. But let's talk about who carried this out. Remember this name, Dawood Ibrahim. He's the individual who attacked Bombay back in 1993 after a number of Muslims were massacred by rampaging Hindus. Now, understand, there are millions and millions of Muslims living in India. They're only outnumbered by Hindus. There has been fratricide going on in India since the British left in the 1940s and gave Pakistan and India independence, splitting them up, but still left millions and millions of Muslims living in India. There are rival gangs. This man named Dawood Ibrahim is a veteran of the CIA's Mujahideen War in Afghanistan. He's now in exile in Karachi. He is from Bombay. He is an Indian national. His father was a police constable in Bombay. Dawood Ibrahim built up quite an extensive criminal syndicate involved in drugs and smuggling, weapons, was involved in providing nuclear materials to AQ Khan in Pakistan, a father of the Pakistani nuclear bomb. He's also worked with the CIA. He's actively got deals with the CIA now. At the present time, gambling casinos in places like Nepal. He had an on and off relationship with the CIA, just like another individual named Osama bin Laden. However, unlike Osama bin Laden, Dawood Ibrahim, when he feels like he's being double-crossed, and there was an attempt earlier this year by the United States to put pressure on Pakistan to extradite this man back to India, when he realized the Americans were involved in this, this is why they singled out Americans in Bombay. He feels that a deal is a deal, and when he feels like he's being double-crossed or being pushed, the word I get, Dawood Ibrahim, he is Osama bin Laden on steroids. He will have his revenge, and that's exactly what we saw happen. Now, obviously, he has links with some Muslim extremist groups, but this was not Al-Qaeda. This was Dawood Ibrahim saying, I am not going to concede my criminal empire, first of all, to the Hindu criminal gangs in Bombay. Dawood Ibrahim still has a lot of muscle on the street in Bombay. He has his agents in the police, in the military, in Indian intelligence, in Pakistani intelligence, in the Pakistani military, and he has friends in the CIA. More blowback because of what the United States did back in that foolish war against the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan, where we just cut deals with all these people, and now we have to live with what we did, and that's what we saw play out in Bombay with these attacks. Criminal gangs tied it, but not Al-Qaeda. If they tell you that, and that's what, you know, Blitzer's trying to push, and that's what these other Fox News propagandists are trying to push, they don't know the first thing about the Indian subcontinent. And I'll tell you, I'll give you an example. There are no American resident reporters in India on the subcontinent. So where does CNN, where does Wolf Blitzer, where does these MSNBC and these Fox News people, ABC, CBS, and NBC get off and telling you what's going on in India when they don't even have resident reporters in India? They don't have news bureaus in India because they're so cheap. They cut back on all their international news staff, but they expect us to believe, they don't have any information other than what they're fed from wire services. It's third, fourth-hand information at best, but you're supposed to believe them when they tell you what's going on in that part of the world. It's a bunch of poppycock. Don't listen to the corporate media. They don't know how to report the news. They don't know what the news is. Anyway, we've got a caller. Clarence is calling from Oklahoma. Clarence, are you on the line?
Hello, Wayne. It's great to talk to you again. It's been a while.
And, good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's have a way of cutting through the proverbial bovine excrement here.
Well, there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent most of October on the in the subcontinent, so to hear people like Blitzer talk about things he's not even aware of. I know. I mean, he gets his propaganda from the same people. You know, he gets his propaganda about, you know, from the Middle East and other parts of the world. But to hear him, play the American people for a bunch of suckers, especially when you've been over there and you've talked to the people and you know the situation, it's very, very frustrating to hear these guys go on the way they go on. And they get this FaceTime on television, which is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I want to ask you another question here, but first, you know, a long time ago when I called you, I told you how much I like your break music, which is The Prisoner, which I watched years ago on
yes.
television.
Right.
Well, I need to know, what is your – that opening theme, that is just some of the great – it's movie music, I know, but I can't identify it.
It is the theme from the movie Independence Day.
Independence Day, okay.
Independence Day, which was, of course, it was a sci-fi movie, but
– right.
I always said that the guy who played the president in that movie would have done a better job than George W. Bush. He was just an actor. He convinced me he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
aliens.
What a concept. President
yeah,
knows
exactly.
what they're doing.
Exactly.
But what I also, and we got a little, I know you're going to have a break coming up here, but what I want to try to say here is what's going on over there sounds suspiciously like, as I've watched things happen. What happened with the Iran-Contra thing, the CIA was flying in drugs because
right.
Congress shut the money off for their little enterprise down there with the Contras in Nicaragua. So
right.
how do we fund them? We go in there, and they pick the drug dealers that will cooperate, and they're allowed to ship their drugs in under, you know, being protected. And the whole drug
exactly.
war is fake because the ones they go after, I think, they're going out. Well, you can see they're spraying and going. These are the ones that wouldn't go along.
They're going after the competition. They want a monopoly on drugs, and that's basically what we see their involvement in the subcontinent from Pakistan, Afghanistan. You know, heroin is now at bumper crop levels in Afghanistan since the United States has taken over that country. Well,
mm-hmm.
supposedly took over the country. We basically, Karzai is not the president of Afghanistan. He's the mayor of a small part of Kabul, if the truth were known.
Yes, I imagine. Well, that's about all I had. I'll go ahead and let you go and get up to break time here, and I'll look forward to the drive. I never miss you every week because it's...
Oh, great. Well, thanks, Clarence, for checking in. Good to talk to you again.
All right.
Anyway, so this is a situation in on the subcontinent. We have more blowback, just like the blowback we saw on 9/11 from our old friend Osama bin Laden. Now it's a man named Dawood Ibrahim. Now that remember that name. This guy has powerful friends. He has financial interests in Dubai. He owns a construction company in Karachi. He still has a lot of muscle, street muscle in Bombay, in the Indian government. He is very well diversified in organized crime, and he does not like the fact that the U.S. was about ready to turn him over to the Indians earlier this year. Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report. We will be right back after this short break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Night Roundup, coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C. If you'd like to call in, the 800 number, toll-free number is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. Another thing we've seen happen, President-elect Obama this past week said he was going to keep Defense Secretary Robert Gates on as the Secretary of Defense. Now, Robert Gates was nominated once to be CIA director. He failed that nomination process. He withdrew his name because of his involvement in Iran-Contra. He finally got renominated by George H.W. Bush and served as CIA director. There was a lot of opposition even at that time in the Senate to his becoming CIA director. It was thought that he had cooked the books on the threat posed by the Soviet Union, where we heard this before, cooking intelligence to please the occupant of the White House and their political bent, whatever the case was, whether it was going to war with Iraq or beefing up our defense because of a non-existent, really non-existent threat from the Soviet Union, just to make a lot of defense contractors wealthy back in the 1980s when Reagan took out the checkbook and was signing billions of dollars over to the defense industry. We saw Robert Gates as part of that. Robert Gates came in replacing Rumsfeld. Has he done everything? Has everything he's done, has it been bad? No. Well, he fired a lot of people. I think he took great steps in getting rid of this dual chain of command that Dick Cheney was running over our nuclear weapons in the Air Force. He fired the Air Force Chief of Staff, the Air Force Secretary. He said other heads were going to roll. I think it remains to be seen how many more heads roll. Gates will be apparently staying on for another year. But let's listen to this short clip from Keith Olbermann, because he's also mentioned some other names that are coming in as part of Obama's national security team. If we can play this clip from Olbermann.
Good evening. This is Tuesday, November 25th, 56 days until the inauguration of President-elect Barack Obama. It is a done deal. The man whose campaign for president began with the idea that he alone, among the major candidates, stood against the invasion of Iraq, will be keeping President Bush's war chief as his own. Our fifth story on the countdown, sources telling three different news organizations, including this one, that Robert Gates will remain as Secretary of Defense for at least 1 year. According to sources who spoke to our own Pentagon correspondent Jim Mikuszewski, it has been, quote, a done deal for some time. No other name has been seriously floated as a possible candidate. According to the source, the deal was sealed for Gates when former Marine Corps candidate Jim Jones was mentioned as the probable candidate for National Security Advisor, former commander of NATO. Politico.com reporting he is, in fact, in. Former Admiral Dennis Blair was named as the likely pick for the Director of National Intelligence, the source calling that a dream team that Gates states could clearly work with. ABC News reporting that President-elect Obama is expected to roll out his entire national security team after the Thanksgiving holiday. Not just Gates, Jones, and Blair, but also Senator Clinton as Secretary of State. And Dr. Susan Rice, an Obama foreign policy advisor during the
campaign. Okay, well, there you have it, the Dream Team. And after this break, I'll be telling you a little bit more about one of those names mentioned, somebody that I unfortunately had a chance to meet. This is Wayne Mattson. We'll be right back after this. I guess we're not going to take a break. We've got a little bit more time here. Anyway, let's go back and review what Olbermann said about his sources. Keith Olbermann mentioned the name Dennis Blair, retired Admiral Dennis Blair, former deputy director of the CIA, commander-in-chief of the U.S. Pacific Forces. Now, Blair is a good friend of every dictator in South and Southeast Asia. He was head of CINGPAC when the royal family of Nepal was massacred, thanks to help from the CIA and Indian intelligence and British intelligence and U.S. Special Operations Forces, which he in Hawaii had control of. He's a good friend of the Indonesian military that have carried out all kinds of human rights abuses and East Timor, for example. Blair is not somebody I would want to see in as Director of National Intelligence. Just another indication that Barack Obama looks like he's governing as a conservative Republican, maybe not as conservative as John McCain, but certainly somebody who is starting to irritate those of us on the left, those of us in the progressive movement. We didn't buy this. We didn't buy people like Dennis Blair. Dennis Blair was on a review board of mine when I was a lowly ensign in the U.S. Navy. He decided he was going to try to catch me on some semantics. I was sitting on the side of the table without the ashtray with a long green tablecloth. Blair was one of these guys who wasn't happy with my performance, and I just never forget a face. And Blair is not one of my favorite folks, but if he becomes the Director of National Intelligence, I don't think much is going to change from who we have there now, Mike McConnell, the former NSA director. So, not a good sign. Now we don't know who he's going to bring in as CIA director, but Dennis Blair, not one of my favorite people. Anyway, we will be right back with our callers and more after this short break. Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Mattson back with you from Washington, D.C., the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Night Roundup. And joining us on the line is Kathy from Louisiana. Are you with us, Kathy?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. I can hear you fine. And I'm glad you called because our last clip tonight is going to be from a native son of Louisiana who had no problems talking about redistribution of wealth. That came up in a debate with John McCain saying, you know, Obama wants to redistribute your wealth, my friends. And, of course, Obama had no such intention because look who he's appointing now to head his economic team. They've redistributed a lot of wealth. They've taken money from the poor and given it to the rich, sort of like Robin Hood in reverse. But we'll be playing a clip from Huey Long, who actually advocated taking money from the rich and giving that money to the poor. He said every man's a king, and of course he was assassinated, obviously, because some wealthy people.
When I was in elementary school, I was taken. I used to live in Baton Rouge, where Huey Long was assassinated, and I was taken on a field trip through the Baton Rouge Capitol, and that is the largest state capitol building in the U.S. Did you know that?
Oh yes, it's a real tall building, and he was shot. Of course, he was shot in the lobby of I believe of the state capitol.
Yeah, so he was shot inside the building.
In front of the building, right? Yeah, and of course that was the basis for the movie All the King's Men, which the recent iteration of that had John Penn playing, not Huey Long per se, because apparently Robert Penn Warren, who wrote the book, was threatened with lawsuits from the Long family if he actually used the actual name. So they came up with some other name, but it's really about Huey Long. But back in those days, of course, you could say, hey, rich people have too much. And he had a great way to put it. He was talking about how somebody would come and we'll play this clip before the end of the show, about how somebody comes to a table and eats up all the food, doesn't leave any for the rest of the people there. But anyway, but the, as I was talking before the break about Bob Gates, it looks like his Obama's national security team is as conservative as his economic team. Hello, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still with you.
Yeah. Oh okay. I had not heard before tonight that Dennis Blair was the person he was thinking about bringing on as director of national intelligence. But Blair and I had a bit of a confrontation back in 1975 in Newport, Rhode Island, when I was a lowly ensign in the Navy, and he thought I didn't want to accept my orders to some ship. Well, it's true. I didn't want to go to this particular ship, but he got into this game of semantics, and then he told me he was an English major, and he thought I was trying to talk around him or try to hornswoggle him or somehow, and we got into this back and forth. But the next time I encountered Blair is when I saw he was commander chief of the Pacific Forces in Hawaii, and in charge of sending special forces to Nepal, the same year that the royal family was massacred, and it just so happened to be U.S. special forces in the country. This sends a bad signal to people like Prachanda, the new prime minister of Nepal, who was a Maoist guerrilla leader, because it was clear that Dennis Blair was out to stomp out every so-called leftist group in Asia, and that went from East Timor to Nepal to all through Cambodia and the Philippines and other countries. He's a real throwback to the Cold War, and I don't know why Obama is thinking of making him the director of national intelligence, but it's quite clear that Obama may not be his own person in these decisions.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. We'll have to wait and see, but I don't have very good hopes for the candidates that he has presented thus far, in particular Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah, Rahm is one of the worst, and as I say, you know, there's nothing wrong with liberals. I wish Obama would recognize that fact and start appointing a few to his administration. So
isn't that the same position that Karl Rove had?
Well, Karl Rove was actually a deputy policy advisor. The current chief of staff, the chief of staff on 9/11 was Andy Card.
That's right.
And he was replaced by Josh Bolton, who's the current chief of staff. And then we had Karl Rove, I believe, had been deputy chief of staff, and then he was a policy advisor. Kathy, hold on. We have Mike calling in from Maryland, so let's see if we can bring Mike on. Maybe he has some insights about what's going on, since Maryland is where the NSA is located. Maybe he has some insights on these intelligence replacements. Mike, are you with us?
Yeah, sure. I enjoy your show, and I try to go to your website as much as possible. I don't know how much insight I have, although I did have a top secret clearance when I was in the Army back in 72 to 74, I was in the Army Security Agency, if that means anything.
Oh, yes.
I did too. I was in the Air Force up until last year, so I was a Russian linguist, so welcome to the club.
That and a buck and a half will buy you a cup of coffee, so. But I was just going to say that there's a lot of speculation, and to me, and that's all I'm doing here, and, you know, trying to surf the web and watching the news, is that it's a false flight. The Mumbai attack, if I'm pronouncing it right,
yes,
was a false flag event, either CIA, Mossad, or MI6 inspired. What do you think about that?
Well, there's definitely, as I mentioned, there's a big organized crime element to this. But these syndicates, these criminal syndicates, especially Ibrahim. His syndicate is tied up with the CIA. He's got agents inside Indian intelligence, Indian police, Pakistani intelligence. Of course, the Indian Hindu gangs are very tied up with the Indian Hindu Party, which is the BJP party, which would like to get back into power in New Delhi. And there's been very close cooperation between the BJP Hindu nationalists and the Mossad. They've shared intelligence. There are Israeli intelligence agents and military active in Kashmir. Now, this puts them right up against the Pakistani military. So the problem with these various groups, including this Chabad House, which they have Chabad houses in Bangkok and Kathmandu and Bombay, all over Asia, all around the world, but as particularly in South Asia and Southeast Asia, they've been linked to the drug trade. They've been linked to intelligence operations, and you know it's unfortunate that they were hit by terrorists, or these criminal gangs, I should say. / terrorists, I guess you could say that. But if you play with fire, you're going to get burned. And,
sure.
You know, I mean, and that's exactly what I think has happened here.
Well, then let me ask you a question, though. If, you know, this is a big operation, multifaceted operation, involving potentially what, maybe dozens of terrorists, maybe? And if that's the case, how the heck you convince people, whether they're criminal gangs or whatever, mercenaries or whatever the heck they are, what's the motivation for people to go out and kill people knowing that they won't make it out alive? I mean, how do they cajole or convince or coerce people to...
Right. You've got hardened criminals that are using some religious terrorists, and obviously, you know, the hardened criminals are not dumb enough to give up their own lives, but you can always find useful idiots that are willing to give up their own. But in this case, to suggest that this is Al-Qaeda and that these people did it because they were being run by religious fanatics is just not the case. These people may have been religious fanatics, but they were being run by criminal gangs. And we do have – there is obviously evidence, intelligence evidence, that Ibrahim was running terrorist groups up in Kashmir, and he has a problem with India. He's an Indian, he's exiled, and he would like to strike back. As a matter of fact, I was told that he was just a Sunni Muslim, a regular Sunni Muslim before 1993, but when India, the Hindus killed a bunch of Muslims in India, he became Osama bin Laden on steroids. That's what I was told by somebody pretty close to the ground.
Sure. Well, yeah. Well, thank you. Can I just ask one more question? I don't want to take up too much time. What do you think about the idea or the speculation that Al Jazeera is basically MI6 or CIA front organization that's used to dispense disinfo to the public?
Well,
what do you think about that?
I've heard that, but, you know, we do know that it was leaked from London that George W. Bush wanted to bomb Al Jazeera's headquarters in Doha, Qatar, and he was talked out of it by Tony Blair. So, yes, there's a bunch of BBC people have been hired by Al Jazeera. But by and large, I think they try to do the job. But that's not to say, look, we do know that the intelligence community, our own, the Brits, do have people in the media. They've had them in the Washington Post. They've had their agents in the New York Times, the BBC. So I'm not saying that it's not it's not totally beyond the realm that they could have people working within Al Jazeera. It would make sense because they have access to countries where the BBC and the Voice of America normally would not have access.
And if it truly is a front for the voice of the so-called Arab street, and if they really were an enemy of the West, I don't think they would let them survive. I think they'd find some way to take them out.
Right. Okay. Good to talk to you, Mike. Yes. Thanks for calling in from Maryland. And, we have, David calling in from, South Carolina. Are you, on with us, David?
Hello. How are you, Mike? Hello?
Great. Yes, hey, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. Great. I was just looking at this, and me and my uncle have these debates all the time. He's a big, Obama supporter, always has been. You know, and I'm looking at this list I made out of the supposedly change, okay, you know.
Right.
If I'm getting off topic, you want to talk about India, I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. No, we were talking about Obama's new economic team and national security team.
That's exactly what I wanted to point out was, okay, right. We got Summers, Volcker, and this guy, Timothy, I think, Geithner.
Right, yeah. Federal Reserve of New York, right.
You know, that's more inside than Paulson, even. I mean, this guy is the key holder, more or less, for the Federal Reserve, you know, they're experts, sure enough. And, you know, of course, it's smart to bring all these guys in and know what they're going to, that they, of course, they know what they're doing. They engineered this thing in the first place. You know, what is it,
well,
phase two?
Right. It's
a plunder or something, you know?
Right. Well, the problem is, you know, if he was bringing in people who would, you know, go after the corruption on Wall Street, that's one thing. But now, you know, let's face it. Franklin Roosevelt named an insider as the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission. His name was Joseph Kennedy, the father of our president. But Joseph, even though Joseph Kennedy was an insider, he went after Wall Street. He went after them with a vengeance. And, you know, does anyone think that a Larry Summers or a Geithner is going to go after his buddies who've looted Wall Street, looted the Treasury? I'll believe it if, you know, I'll believe it when I see it, but I'm not holding my breath either.
Exactly. And that's, you know, I could just, any day now, we could see Kissinger assigned as the National Security Advisor, you know.
Well, that's the next shoe I'm afraid is going to drop, that, you know, Obama's going to have a meeting with Henry Kissinger, you know?
Oh,
and,
no.
You know,
indeed. Gates, which, okay, I can see that. The guy really does know what he's doing. I can understand that to a degree, especially since he was Brzezinski's running boy for a long time.
Right.
But this Dennis Blair, my goodness, I had
Dennis
no idea.
Dennis Blair is, look, I'd never forget somebody like him, and he, as far as I'm concerned, he is really bad news. I've tracked his career since my little run-in with him many 30 some years ago.
Well, you know something, an up-close, what you call, first-hand account of getting a judgment of an individual is much better than just hearing it about it.
He was only a lieutenant commander then, but now he's a retired admiral, former deputy director of the CIA.
I was wondering how an ensign got by with confronting an admiral. I guess it's because he was a lieutenant commander.
Well, it was called a review board for a technical school that I was going to, and I was on the side of the table without the ashtray. Obviously, I was the guy in trouble, and left that meeting room and was told to await further orders. And, of course, Blair thinks he punished me, but I was in Newport, Rhode Island during one of the worst winters they've ever had, and my orders were to Key West, Florida. So if that was punishment from Lieutenant Commander Blair, I guess I should thank him.
You got put on vacation. How about that?
Right, exactly.
Well,
anyway,
thank you, Mr. Madison, for all your hard work, and appreciate
it. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good talking to you. Do we still have Kathy on the line with us from Louisiana?
Yes, you do.
Oh, okay, great. Okay. Well, I want to go to this other story here. That what happened at this Walmart in Long Island is just a travesty. This poor fellow. His name, he's of Haitian descent. I read more about him, Mr. Damore. He actually went and rescued a friend of his who actually escaped the World Trade Center on 9/11. He went and got him on the other side of the Brooklyn Bridge and took him home. And then after he saved his friend on 9/11, this happens to him at this Walmart. But this, if we have time, if we can play this short clip of this report out of WNBC up in New York on the Walmart case.
We're following breaking news from Long Island, New York, and on this day when so many Americans go out and shop, Black Friday bargain hunting trip has turned deadly early this morning. A local Walmart opened its doors at 5 a.m. to a crush of holiday shoppers. And witnesses say a man was trampled to death. WNBC's Tracy Strahan joins us live from Valley Stream, New York. What happened here, Tracy?
Well, Contessa, good morning to you. We're at Green Acres Mall, and the Walmart where this happened actually remains closed to the public. The potential shoppers being rerouted away from the scene, all as investigators try to piece together, but what all accounts is being labeled as a stampede. Now, we have new details from Nassau County Police. They tell us a 34-year-old overnight store clerk was knocked to the ground by that crush of people you described after the overly eager crowd pushed through the doors right around 5 o'clock this morning. We even saw some broken glass on the scene. Now, that victim was taken to a local hospital where he was later
pronounced
dead.
We'll leave that there.
Around
we have a short break,
Eastern
and we'll talk about
time.
This terrible case with the Walmart after we come back from this break. Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, Saturday Night Roundup. And before we went on the break, and Kathy, if you're still with us, one of the things I wanted to mention, there was a pregnant woman who was knocked down there. Oh, okay, she's gone. There was a pregnant woman who was knocked down in that stampede. She miscarried. You know, this Walmart is near where Bill O'Reilly grew up in Long Island, and he always is saying, how come they're stealing Christmas? They don't say Merry Christmas in Walmart. Well, Bill, if this is your idea of Christmas, to trample a Walmart worker to death and knock a pregnant woman over who suffers a miscarriage, we don't want your Christmas, Bill. Take your Christmas and take it away. We don't need that. We don't need this kind of activity with these people. A Walmart opening up at 5 o'clock, and so, you know, they're not giving this stuff away. But even if they were, that's no excuse to knock somebody over and trample them to death and cause the pregnant woman to have a miscarriage. If that's their idea of Christmas, close all the Walmarts. Let's not even celebrate that kind of Christmas. Before we go, let me play this clip of Huey Long talking about redistribution of the wealth in the 1930s. Let's listen to Huey Long.
How many men ever went to a barbecue and would let one man take off the table what's intended for 9/10 of the people to eat? The only way you'll ever be able to feed the balance of the people is to make that man come back and bring back some of that grub he ain't got no business with.
We find that the one crying need of our people, the redistribution of wealth, so that none would be too poor and none would be too rich, is always neglected by the party that is in power.
Huey Long had a great compassion for a lot of people.
He was swept into office thanks in part to his philosophy of redistributing American wealth.
No man must be allowed to have too much. No man must be allowed to have too little. Unless you limit the size of the big, it necessarily means that the small people must become more and more impoverished as time goes on.
Well, there you have it from Huey Long. Maybe some of these people that Obama is appointing to his economic team, maybe they ought to go back and listen to some of the speeches of Huey Long, who actually would have been appalled at the obscene wealth we've seen go to the hands into the hands of very few in this country, from those who work for a living. Those many of these people now been laid off. Their pensions are in jeopardy. Their savings have been wiped out. They're losing their homes. It's time for Obama to listen to the speeches of Huey Long and not the speeches of people like Tim Geithner and Paulson and Robert Rubin and the rest of these Wall Street crooks, these big three auto company chief chief executive officers who came into Washington begging for money on their private jets, let them drive back to Detroit in one of their lousy cars they manufacture, the gas-guzzling SUVs. We don't need that kind of redistribution of wealth from the people who work for a living to the multi-billionaires. It needs to be like Huey Long said. It needs to go from the super wealthy down to the people who work for a living, who basically made these people wealthy. Every man is a king. Anyway, that's it for this week. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report Saturday Night Roundup. We will be back with you this time next Saturday. Good night from Washington, D.C.